Okay, if we could all take our seats now, our next panel is on a system-level approach to addressing health inequity in food and nutrition security, policy norms, technology, and governance approaches. Our next speaker is Gordon Schlitt, who's the director of the Department of Food Safety and Zones at the World Health Organization in Switzerland. Sorry about that.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks very much. I'd like to maybe get the discussion a little bit going in the direction outside Canada, because there's been a lot of discussion here from a developed country perspective. And I think when we're talking about convergence, we should also be talking about convergence between countries, I think. So that's at least one of the issues that I'd like to emphasize. First, why do we think that it's important in relation to food safety and nutrition to do something in developing countries? The issue is that if we try to improve food in developing countries by supporting their food production systems and their food safety systems, they will have a better access to food trade. That means that it also means that they will have improved health in their own country, but both of these issues will actually give them economic development. And therefore, the issues in relation to food safety and nutrition relate to the population, the local population, but it also relates to their opportunity of getting access to markets, food markets. The way that we traditionally work at the international level when we try to have some sort of convergence of what we want to do can be in a number of different ways. Here we have the different types of systems that we try to use. And in the bottom you will see that for foods we have a system of a commission, the Codex Alimentarius Commission, which is a joint FAO and WHO commission with 176 member states agreeing on how to have standards in the area of food. Codex has been there for almost 50 years, but it's a lot more important now than before. At least member states believe it's more important now, because of the WTO agreement. And in the WTO agreement, we have two important agreements that relate to food. First one is the TBT, and the second and more important one is the SPS agreement about sanitary and phytosanitary measures. This states clearly that every country has the right to take measures to protect their consumers. That could be different from other countries' protection measures. But as far as it's necessary and deemed necessary by the single country to protect public health, they are allowed to take the measures that they want to, if they can justify them on scientific grounds. And then the SPS agreement refers to the international harmonization of standards and the use of Codex Alimentarius standards. So there is a reference in the WTO agreement to Codex, so it means that if you don't have your own science, then you just revert to Codex, and therefore Codex has a lot of importance now in relation to international trade of food. Now, SPS agreement has a number of different interesting articles, but one of them, or two of them I'll mention here. One is that you have to accept what another member state is doing if it gives the same outcome. So it doesn't really matter if the other country has exactly the same system that you have. As long as they have a system that gives you the same public health outcome, it should be accepted by the importer. And another very important one in relation to the whole food global market, food production market, is that if a developing country has a problem exporting into Canada, Canada should not just throw the food back at them at the border. They should actually go to the exporting country and help them solve the problem. And we have a number of examples where both the U.S. and countries in the EU have actually gone to developing countries and helped them improve their production system so that they don't have to throw away the food at the borders. Now, food safety clearly for many years have been international, and we are setting the standards at the international level. For nutrition, it doesn't really seem like that. Now, what are the reasons for that? My first suggestion is that there's not really any science in nutrition. I can hear that not everybody agrees with me. Then there is the issue that some people consider food safety to be clearly the business of government, whereas nutrition is your own choice, so why should governments be involved in that, and therefore why should we internationally look at standardization? You could also say that food safety standards help major food exporting countries to export cheaply because you have the same standards all over, whereas nutrition standards could be seen to impede some major food exports. If this was the case, which it easily could be, then one of the reasons why some countries continue to say that nutrition should be dealt with at the national level would be that they don't want to have an impediment to them exporting crap food to everybody else. I'm just saying it in a Danish way. We're not very good at. It's amazing when you get to international communities and then you hear these Brits or Canadians, you know, they're talking about, you know, east, west, down. You don't really get the meaning, you know. You don't really know if they're for or against or something like that. Give me a Dane anytime. You will find out if he's for or against. Isn't it true, Peterson, even if you're only Norwegian? Okay. Food safety systems have evolved over the last many years where we have tried to do this international standard setting. You could say that back in the 80s, the development of legislation in this area was focusing on single cases. When a single case came up, you did something about it. Normally, you just had some sort of an expert opinion. A professor would normally be an old man who would have a good idea of this area and who would tell the government what to do. The focus was on the hazard in the food. In the 90s, we began to have discussions about the risk and saying that it's not so much whether the hazard is in the food, it's more if it's giving a risk to human health. And we have the risk analysis paradigm there. I'll mention that in a few minutes. And in the future, I believe that there will be a lot more focus on actually looking at the real disease burden in this area. So difference between hazard is the agent, so it's the microorganism or the chemical. Risk is the probability of disease, and burden is the incidence of disease. So you actually use epidemiological data to give you a full picture of what the burden is. And hopefully in the future, you will be able to also attribute that to specific foods. The risk analysis paradigm that we are using at the moment in Codex clearly separates the risk assessment from the risk management. So science has to be done separately from the making the decisions on what to do. And everything is floating in a sea of risk communication. We should be able to communicate before we start doing anything, when we have done the risk assessment and when we made the decisions in the risk management part. Disease burden is a new thing that has been moved forward in the WHO agenda for a number of other diseases, but now we've also started a project to look at the foodborne disease burden. And these are the definitions. So clearly we know that diarrhea is a burden. We said in the old days that it's 1.8 million deaths. We now estimate it to be 3 million deaths every year from diarrhea. We know that there are 7.3 million deaths per year from cancers. We don't know what percentage is foodborne in relation to cancers or in relation to diarrhea. In diarrhea, it's probably a lot. With cancers, some estimate up to 30%. It's probably less than that. But still, it's a significant food burden just from these two. And then, of course, you have a lot of other diseases that are also foodborne. All this is being looked at in relation to morbidity, disability, and mortality. And then you have one big matrix where you then end up with disability-adjusted life years, which is the burden measurement in WHO. And this has been started a couple of years ago, and we hope within 3, maybe 4 years to have a global atlas with the foodborne disease burden for the global system. In relation to disease burden from food, of course, we should be talking about both food safety and nutrition issues. It's still not well defined with the burden and its ongoing work, but we do know, of course, that a lot of the burden that has already been alluded to in the meeting here is related to nutrition and the double burden of overweight and malnutrition. But of course, health benefits and absence of health risk should go hand in hand, and they should be dealt with in a similar way. Now, if we want the burden outcome to inform policy, we need also to be able to get the policy needs into the burden studies, and at the moment we don't really have a way of doing that. So we need to consider and integrate into our burden studies the policy needs that might be there from the policy sector. So if we want the burden outcome to inform efficiently, then we need to have a better interaction between the policy level and the level dealing with the burden. Again, the burden data, when we get them, will most likely affect what we will do. We don't know what the policy implications will be, but there should be some sort of a feedback loop. Policy drives science, science drives policy. And that should go for food safety just as for nutrition, although there is not much nutrition science. So if we talk about the international agreement on methodology to estimate foodborne disease burden, we would say that it's important that countries agree on which methodology to use. We think that it's also can be used not only to give us information about the burden, but also to guide us in the most efficient use of public health budget. And it will definitely enable some sort of an evaluation of food safety intervention strategies or nutrition intervention strategies and whether they work, and if they work, how much they actually do to solve the problems that we try to solve. Good science, I would underline this, because from the food safety side, it's clear that if we don't have good science, we are always in trouble. If we don't have good science in relation to certain areas, we cannot make sensible decisions, and it's very difficult to get global agreement on decisions if we do not have global agreement about the science. We have knowledge, we have research. Sometimes we don't always link them to the problems. We think that we could be doing that a lot better by internationally interacting about some of these main measurement methods that we have. Then again, what has this got to do with inequity? I would say that some people would say that if we just get it right in the rich countries, this will trickle down. But as we know, with a lot of theories about trickle down, they don't really turn out to be true. If some could also say that if it takes many years to bring about the evidence in the rich countries, it will just have to take some more years for the poor countries. They will just be behind all the time. So can't we just do it as we usually do? We develop it in the rich countries and then we put some aid into the developing countries. Or would it actually in this case make more sense to do the leapfrog? Because the issue is that a number of the things that we are considering in relation to food production in rich countries could actually be supplanted into the developing countries very easily, and we know that that is feasible. So we don't always have to look at a situation and say we'll just have to take 5 or 10 more years and then it can be done in developing countries also. Should we just tell the developing countries what to do from our experience? Well, actually, I think this statement is very true, that even though we sometimes believe that you don't need as much evidence to tell developing countries what to do, actually it is the other way around. You need to have a very good evidence base to be able to advise developing countries how to use their money, because it means a lot. In Canada, you can use money for all these different things. You can get money from the common agricultural policy in the EU, which is wasting, is the biggest waste of money in the world is the CAP. It's totally incredible. Denmark, which is probably the richest country in the world, is getting more money from the EU than they pay to the EU. Why? Because their agriculture is so big and because, of course, agriculture needs to have more support because of the poor farmers. It's 40% of the EU budget. It's a major scandal. I think it's a good idea to use a small fraction of that for that project, but the major scandal is the whole system. And that's for EU, and that's for the US, and I guess it's probably also for Canada. Okay, it's much smaller. Canada is a lot, much smaller country. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Lowering the global disease burden related to food is clearly possible through international work. We can have international trade of safer, more nutritious food, but we should not end up in the ditch over there where we are saying that, well, developing countries, they have a problem getting into the global market, so we should lower the standards so they can easily get in. It's not the way to do it. We need to improve the food safety and the quality of the food that is produced in developing countries to the same level and to the general global standards that we have in this area. If the food market is global, and if we can set food safety standards globally, if we can set food quality standards globally, which we're also doing in Codex, why can we not talk of global food and nutrition standards? And I think that that's a big problem, and it's a political problem, and it's a problem between a number of member states that have different interests and talk about health, but don't act. Thank you.